I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
What happened tonight is a huge tragedy and war massacre that cannot be tolerated or allowed to pass without accountability. Tonight, an Israeli airstrike hit Al-Ali Hospital in Gaza City.
Palestinian officials are accusing Israel of killing over 500 people in an airstrike on a hospital in Gaza City where thousands of civilians had sought refuge. Israel's denied responsibility as the overall death toll in Gaza tops 3,300. President Biden's in Tel Aviv for an unprecedented wartime visit to show U.S. support for Israel.
I want to say to the people of Israel, their courage, their commitment, their bravery is stunning. It's really stunning. I'm proud to be here. Thank you.
We'll speak to Columbia Professor Rashid Khalidi, as well as Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories. Plus, we go to Israel to speak with a peace activist whose parents were killed in last week's surprise attack by Hamas that killed over 1,300 Israelis. The Sun is calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's in Israel hours after Palestinian officials accused Israel of killing at least 500 people at Gaza's Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital in an airstrike. In addition to treating sick and wounded patients, the hospital was acting as a refuge for displaced Gazans fleeing Israel's unrelenting attacks. This is Mohammed Al-Naka, a doctor at Al-Ahli Hospital.
There was no warning before the hospital was targeted. There were about 3,000 people who were taking shelter here. While we were working at the hospital and without any warning, around 6:30 p.m., the hospital was targeted by shelling. We didn't know what it was, but we found out what it can do after it targeted children who were cut into pieces.
Gaza's health ministry said Israel told the hospital it had sent warning strikes one day before the deadly explosion. The UN has called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. Amidst international condemnation over the attack, Israel's denied responsibility, blaming a Palestinian Islamic Jihad rocket. Israeli officials appeared to have deleted a video posted on social media showing Palestinian rockets being fired after realizing the timestamp on the footage did not match up with the hospital attack. A planned trip to Jordan as part of President Biden's visit to the Middle East was canceled in the wake of the hospital bombing. Biden said he was outraged by the attack, which constitutes a war crime, but sided with Israel as he made remarks alongside Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu earlier today.
I was deeply saddened and outraged by the explosion at the hospital in Gaza yesterday. And based on what I've seen, it appears as though it was done by the other team, not you.
Many have pointed out that militant groups in Palestine do not have the firepower to level a massive building. Israel has a history of lying about its responsibility in crimes against Palestinian civilians, including the murder of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh last year, which it initially blamed on Palestinians. Israel apologized a year after her death. As Biden meets with Israeli officials, Palestinians condemned U.S. support for Israel's genocide. This is a resident of Khan Yunis in Gaza.
To President Biden and his administration, generations will not forget, and history will be recorded, that it was your administration, your billions of dollars, your support with weapons of mass destruction to the Israeli Defense Forces, which has caused what is being happening right now in Gaza.
On Tuesday, Israeli strikes hit other civilian targets in Gaza, including a UN school where thousands were taking refuge. At least 24 UN installations have been hit in the past week, killing at least 14 UN staffers. Israeli forces have killed at least 3,300 Palestinians over the last 12 days. Around a third of those killed were children. Gazans continue to suffer from a lack of all basic necessities, including water. Turkey said it's in talks with Hamas to release hostages taken by the group in its deadly October 7th attack in Israel that killed over 1,300 Israelis. Meanwhile, Iran has warned of potential preemptive action against Israel as it prepares for a possible ground invasion of Gaza. Israel and Hezbollah, a Lebanese group backed by Iran, have been exchanging fire on the Israel-Lebanon border. Israel's reportedly set to ban Al Jazeera's operations in the country over its coverage of the war. Al Jazeera is one of the few global media networks that has reporters on the ground in Gaza. In related news, the Committee to Protect Journalists said at least 17 media workers have been killed since the start of the war, 13 of them Palestinian, 3 Israeli, and 1 Lebanese. Here in the United States, Jewish Voice for Peace and other groups are rallying in Washington, D.C. today to demand an immediate ceasefire. 24 rabbis are leading prayers and mass civil disobedience. Meanwhile, inside the White House and other government buildings, staffers have shared with reporters the challenges in calling out Israel's crimes against Palestinians. Government employees say they fear possible retaliation for even raising the issue of humanitarian protections or restraining Israel. 6 months of war in Sudan have plunged the country into one of the worst humanitarian nightmares in recent history, killing up to 9,000 people and displacing over 5 million. That was the stark warning issued by the United Nations, which said at least 25 million people in Sudan are also in need of urgent humanitarian relief. Humanitarian aid relief has been hindered by violence between the Sudanese army and the rapid support forces since fighting broke out in April. The healthcare situation is also dire, as many medical facilities in conflict areas have been shuttered. Human rights groups have condemned the ongoing targeting and killing of civilians and journalists. The Committee to Protect Journalists is demanding an investigation into the October 10th killing of Sudanese journalist Halima Idris Salim, who died after RSF fighters reportedly ran over her with a vehicle while she covered the conflict in the city of Omdurman. The government of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and opposition leaders have agreed to new rules ahead of next year's presidential election. The move is expected to clear the way for the United States to ease its harsh sanctions on Venezuela, which have wrecked the economy, forcing millions to flee. As part of the agreement, the Venezuelan government will allow all political parties to choose their candidates, grant permission to delegations from the UN and the European Union to observe elections, and give equal media access to all campaigns. In climate news, the Amazon River has dipped to its lowest levels in over a century amidst a protracted regional drought and wildfires. 60 of the 62 cities in Brazil's northern Amazonas state have declared a state of emergency as communities struggle to meet their basic needs.
It's challenging for the communities because what they don't produce, which is food, is what they need most at the moment, as well as medicines. We've just heard from people in the community about the fear of getting ill, the fear of needing medical care and finding it difficult to travel to the hospital.
In the UK, Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg was detained by London police Thursday at a protest outside the Energy Intelligence Forum, a major oil and gas industry conference.
Behind these closed doors at the oil and money conference, spineless politicians are making deals and compromises with lobbyists from destructive industries, the fossil fuel industry. People all over the world are suffering and dying from the consequences of the climate crisis caused by these industries who we allow to meet with our politicians and have privileged access to.
Back in the U.S., in Georgia, a man who was wrongfully imprisoned for 16 years for a crime he didn't commit was killed by police Monday. Leonard Allen Kuehr, a black man, was driving on a highway in Camden County near the Georgia-Florida state line when a sheriff's deputy pulled him over, reportedly for speeding. The officer notified him he'd be arrested before shocking him with a taser at least twice, beating him with a baton, then fatally shooting him. The 53-year-old man was released from a Florida prison in 2020 after he was exonerated for an armed robbery conviction from 2004. Since his release, he often gave inspirational talks to high school students and had plans to go to college. Far-right Ohio Congressmember Jim Jordan failed Tuesday to reach the 217-vote threshold needed to become the next House Speaker. 20 of his fellow Republicans voted against him, while 212 Democrats voted for House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Jim Jordan is a close Trump ally, was involved in efforts to overturn the 2020 election results. Congress members are again voting today. The House has been without a speaker for 2 weeks following the ouster of Kevin McCarthy. Meanwhile, a bipartisan move to empower Speaker pro tem Patrick McHenry to oversee legislative business is being discussed as a way out of the current quagmire. And the Supreme Court reinstated for a second time the Biden administration's regulations on ghost guns, unassembled, unmarked gun kits that can be purchased online. In 2022, the federal government imposed similar regulations on DIY guns to standard guns, including mandating serial numbers and background checks for purchasers. A federal judge in Texas issued a nationwide injunction on the Biden rule, but Tuesday's Supreme Court ruling will allow the regulations to stand while a legal challenge plays out. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinian officials are accusing Israel of killing over 500 people in an airstrike on a hospital in Gaza City where thousands of civilians had sought refuge. Israel's denied responsibility, claiming the explosion was caused by a failed rocket fired by the militant group Islamic Jihad. Palestinian officials have blasted Israel's claim, pointing out Israeli military had already hit the hospital just days before. This is Dr. Fadel Naim, head of the orthopedic surgery department at El Ahli Hospital.
I will describe what I saw myself. I was in the surgery department and I had just finished a surgery and I was about to rest before my next surgery. Suddenly we heard the sound of a huge explosion. In the beginning, we thought it was one of the explosions we hear all the time. We didn't think it was in the hospital. Then people came to the surgery department screaming and yelling, asking us to save them, telling us they were injured and dead people. It was a shock for everyone. The hospital was full of dead people, injured people, and body parts. People were crying and screaming. We tried to give first aid, but there were more injuries than we could handle with our limited resources at the hospital. Many people were martyred. Some of them were alive. We saw them alive and breathing, but we could not do anything for them. They died in our arms. We saw them.
The blast came just hours before President Biden landed in Israel for an unprecedented wartime visit to Israel, where he met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to express U.S. support for Israel. Biden placed the blame for the hospital strike on Palestinians.
I was deeply saddened and outraged by the explosion at the hospital in Gaza yesterday. And based on what I've seen, it appears as though it was done by the other team, not you.
Biden said it appears it was done by the other team, not you. Earlier today, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza.
For an immediate humanitarian ceasefire to provide sufficient time and space to help realize my 2 appeals and to ease the epic human suffering we are witnessing. Too many lives and the fate of the entire region hang on the balance.
On Tuesday night, Democracy Now!'s Messiah Rhodes spoke with Dr. Haman Ola, an internal medicine and nephrology specialist working in Gaza City at the largest hospital, Al-Shifa, which is around 5 miles away from Al-Ahli Hospital, where over 500 Palestinians died in an airstrike. Dr. Alo said an earlier Israeli airstrike had hit Al-Ahli Hospital days before Tuesday's devastating blast.
This is a Baptist hospital. Am I clear enough? A Baptist hospital. It is definitely some something not related to Islam or to whatever extremist group some people consider. So it is a very old hospital, aged more than 100 years. So it is situated in a very densely populated area. It was hit the day before, but patients, refugees, and staff couldn't simply leave the hospital.
So you're saying that the hospital was hit before?
Yeah, it was. And then when it was finally hit again, the toll is rising now to more than 800 lives lost. And what if this is going to happen in other hospitals, in bigger hospitals? The massacre is going to be worse. There will be no safer shelter for all patients. As a physician, I'm afraid if I now leave and go to work, my hospital is going to be hit as well. And we have, for example, in terms of dialysis, we have only now 5 hospitals providing hemodialysis service. What if nurses are afraid of going there? What if patients are afraid of going there? What if injured patients, war injured with war-related injuries, do not go there? This means not slow. This is even faster, very rapid.
Dr. Hamam Alo went on to describe how tens of thousands of civilians have sought refuge at the hospitals in Gaza.
In a Shifa hospital, there are almost 40,000 persons outside the hospital buildings. They came looking for safer shelter away from their high-risk areas. Those are in addition to the patients now living in the hospital hallways. Wherever you go, no matter what ward you go to, there are a lot of people sleeping, kids, women, ladies, elderly patients. Some of them are immunosuppressed. They are living in the hospital hallways. So you can barely even walk through the hallway because of people actually living there for more than a week. And you can't just simply ask them to leave so you can walk freely because they have no safer shelter, and many of those lost their homes now. So this is their new home. So if you could imagine the amount and the magnitude of transmissible diseases and infections. Speaking of which, yesterday I met the first patient with a disease called leptospirosis. This is a bad disease that we usually get from poorly hygienic living circumstances, transmitted by rodents and sewage water and dirty drinking water. So this disease affects badly our kidneys and liver. The patient is in a state of acute renal failure, acute kidney injury. His whole life is threatened, and this is because he was in an UNRWA school as a shelter, but those schools are now very busy with very unlivable living circumstances. But he had to be there with his family looking for a safer shelter away from his threatened house.
That was Dr. Hamam Alo, an internal medicine and nephrology specialist working in Gaza City at Al-Shifa Hospital, Gaza's largest. When we come back, we speak to Columbia University professor Rashid Khalidi. Stay with us. Hey. music by Sana Musa. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinian officials are accusing Israel of killing over 500 people in an airstrike on a hospital in Gaza City where thousands of civilians had sought refuge. Israel's denying responsibility, claiming the explosion was caused by a failed rocket fired by the militant group Islamic Jihad. Palestinian officials have blasted Israel's claim, pointing out Israel, the military, had already hit the hospital just days before. As we continue to look at Israel's war on Gaza, we're joined by Rashid Khalidi, the Edward Said Professor of Modern Arab Studies at Columbia University, a renowned Palestinian-American scholar. He's the author of a number of books, including his latest, The Hundred Years' War on Palestine. Professor Khalidi's new piece for The New York Times is headlined, "The U.S. Should Think Twice About Israel's Plans for Gaza." We're going to go to that in just a minute, Rashid, what the U.S. should be thinking about right now. But if you can begin by responding to these developments of the last 24 hours with the explosion at Al-Ahli Hospital and the significance of this.
Well, it's obviously had an enormous significance. It led to the cancellation of a summit that was planned for Amman with President Biden. The Arab participants all pulled out after this atrocity. I think it's also led to increased anger all over the Arab world. There are demonstrations in at least 8 or 9 Arab capitals as a result of this. There was already rage at blanket American support for Israel, and I think this has increased that. I think that it is very hard to believe, given that Israel has threatened hospitals and schools in the past, and it's hit hospitals and schools in the past, and that the kinds of weapons used by Islamic Jihad and Hamas have very limited warheads, that this could have been, as the Israelis claim, a misfire. As you reported, a piece of video that they put up turns out to have been dated from a period after the attack on this hospital. In any case, whoever was responsible, the result will be enormous anger at the United States for its support of Israel, as well as a further increase in this enormous death toll inside Gaza.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, the Palestinian legislator and medical doctor himself, said they actually had, in a very short period of time, a number of explanations of what happened. At first, they didn't say this. They said that Hamas was operating underneath the hospital. Then they said they were using Palestinians as human shields, sort of to explain what had happened. Then they came up with this. Now, I wanted to ask you, we had on Sharif Abdelkaddous, who this award-winning documentary, The Killing of Shireen Abu Akleh, won the George Polk Award for that, documenting what Israel said about the murder of this Palestinian-American journalist. They first said she was killed by a Palestinian gunman, then said evidence was inconclusive. Then, after enormous pressure and multiple investigations by many news outlets and human rights groups, they said they likely killed her, but not intentional, and caught in crossfire, something that was disproven by human rights group after forensic architecture study of the whole thing. Showing it was an Israeli sniper, Professor Khalidi.
I mean, Israel has an enormously successful public relations machine. It took them, I think, 45 minutes to put out this specific cover story on this one, and it was immediately knocked down, as I think you've already reported, when it turned out that the piece of film that they produced actually dated 40 minutes after the attack on the hospital.
The New York Times pointed that out, the timestamp.
Precisely.
And then they actually retracted the video from X, from Twitter.
Precisely. I mean, they have a well-oiled machine to manufacture cover stories for everything they do. They have been warning hospitals that they are targets since before, just after this attack, the initial attack. Out of Gaza on the 7th of October. They hit this hospital the other day, as you just reported. They hit a school today. If you read the Israeli press, you have senior Israeli generals and retired generals talking about places like hospitals and schools as targets because they claim there are Hamas bunkers beneath them. So it's hard not to accept that this was an Israeli airstrike or an Israeli bombardment. In any case, I think here perception is reality. Given that Israel has dropped 6,000 bombs at least on the Gaza Strip in the last 11 days, it's very hard to believe that it will be very hard, at least for people in the Middle East, who know how Israel systematically lies about what it does in military operations, to believe that this was anybody else than Israel. And I think that's the important fact to retain. People in Palestine, people in the Arab world, people in everywhere except in the American, Western European media bubble are going to chalk this up to Israel's attack on Gaza.
So talk about your piece. The U.S. should think twice about Israel's plans for Gaza. Explain what you see unfolding now and respond to President Biden sitting down with the Prime Minister Netanyahu today and saying the other team did it, attacking the hospital, and go on from there.
Well, I mean, the president has bonded the United States to Israel at the hip since very soon after this horrible escalation started. And in so doing, he's made the United States responsible in the eyes of the world for everything. And this is the latest example of that. He's basically read from an Israeli teleprompter, as he seems to do routinely when anything relating to the Middle East comes up. It's almost as if his lines are scripted in Tel Aviv at the Israeli Defense Ministry, where their disinformation headquarters are located. And he has, I think, put the United States in a position that I am not entirely sure anybody in his administration realizes. The United States is going to be vilified, not just in the Middle East, as a result of its unlimited support for Israel. What we are seeing now is only the beginning. The munitions that are being sent, the aircraft carriers that have been sent to the Eastern Mediterranean, the huge bill that they're going to put before Congress for, I've seen a figure of $100 billion, is going to cement in people's minds the idea that the United States and Israel are one, which means that whatever happens in Gaza going forward in terms of people being killed, innocent civilians being killed, in terms of population being expelled, basically we're talking about ethnic cleansing of northern Gaza, and heaven forbid people actually being forced out of Gaza into Egypt, which is still a possibility, even though the Egyptians have resisted. All of these things will be put down not just to Israel, but to the United States. And I don't think they fully realize, or if they do, they haven't done anything about it, that this is what the president has, this is where the president has put the United States. For whatever reason, electoral reasons, his own personal sympathy for Israel, it really doesn't matter. We are now in a situation where the United States, in my view, has put itself in a more precarious position in the Middle East than it has any time since the 1967 war.
Talk about what's happening on the northern border, on the Israel-Lebanon border, and Hezbollah, and the back-and-forth rocket fire that's going on there, and what this could signify.
Well, I mean, the most apocalyptic scenario, which I hope and pray does not come about, would be a full-scale war on the northern border between Hezbollah and Israel. That has the potential to draw many other actors in and turn into an even wider war than that, possibly, heaven forbid, involving Syria and Iran and then indeed perhaps the United States. That would be a real apocalyptic scenario. I have a sense that the United States, Iran, and Hezbollah and Israel are all reluctant to go too far down that path. Any